Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
Thank you for joining me, Michael Kester.
Oh, you know, I'm happy to be here. Always happy to do these shows.
My name is Eric, and of course this is Double Feature, where we have two movies, a sort of comic book tribute by horror legends.
There we go.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah.
It's pretty spot on. Who are the legends? What's the tribute? What the fuck is happening right now?
The legends are George A. Romero and James something Gunn. And the films are going to be Creepshow and The Specials.
I think also legendary Stephen King will be in here. There's going to be a lot of legends.
You're right. There's so many legends.
Yeah, a lot of legendary actors, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But the true legend, the true hero of today's double feature episode is Jeremy Wookenfuss.
Right.
Who backed our show and wanted to see us do, I don't remember, I want to say Creepshow.
Yeah.
Probably wasn't The Specials, because I don't think anyone knows what that is. But now, thanks to Jeremy, we're doing Creepshow and everyone will know what The Specials
A double whammy. So double whammy and double feature.
That's great. It's what you want, as Zack Snyder would say. So listen, we're going to spoil them. And since you haven't even seen The Specials yet, you're going to want to skip that using chapters. But you might want to skip over Creepshow first, because you watched Tales from the Crypt on accident instead.
Uh-huh.
And that's not the movie we're doing this week.
Or you're just furious because it's not as good as the comics.
If you think it's not as good as the book, you can skip over it. And maybe directly to The Specials, which you did see and are excited to hear us talk about. I don't really know. It's left up to you. You're a free operator. You can do anything you wish. So we just did one of those things we're going to do.
What's that?
It's additional content. You remember that?
Oh,
we recorded that?
I did. Yeah, I was there for that.
You were.
Something about robots or...
That went fucking great. I think it went great.
No, I do too.
Some people might not know what the additional content is. Maybe we should fill them in on that.
So we did this, we ran a Kickstarter. Some of you know we ran a Kickstarter, and that's why you're listening to the show right now.
Why we're still alive.
And so as one of the requirements, one of the conditions of our Kickstarter parole is that we come out with these additional content episodes, which are chock full of shit we didn't want to do.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this time we did Shane and Westworld.
I don't mean that we didn't enjoy doing, but it's stuff that we didn't.
Hell yeah, we enjoyed that.
We didn't put into the calendar. It's stuff that other people.
This is extra.
It's basically people going, "Hey, Eric and Michael, you're gonna like this."
Right, right. So we saw Shane and Westworld. We recorded a whole show about it, and the good news is also the bad news. So the good news is it's truly additional content. Meaning it's not this episode of the show, it's some other episode, and you're still going to get an episode next time. The bad news is, since it's additional, it's off to the side, so you're not going to hear it. So good news is, you still get the normal episodes of the show. Bad news is, this isn't Shane and Westworld, I guess is what I'm saying. So if you back the Kickstarter, you should have gotten a message about that. If you haven't, doublefeatureshow@gmail.com, and we'll make sure you get to the episode. It's really just there for people who back the Kickstarter incentive to either do the additional content or to listen to it. And thank you guys a ton for that. We're going to be coming out with these probably about once a month, just in addition to the normal show.
All right.
Let's kick off October with Creepshow, which is, yeah, you're right, directed by George A. Romero,
mm-hmm.
who I think we might see a little bit more this year on the show.
Very likely.
You want to get into some Romero stuff?
I just want to.
Might
just
as well do that.
I think it's fair. Yeah. So the thing about George Romero,
it's fair to use Creepshow as the introduction to George A. Romero.
Well, George Romero,
it's
that's
what he's most notable for, I think. Right?
I can't think
of anything else in his history. That
Creepshow 2, because he produced it.
Oh, right. You're right. Creepshow.
What's
2
the movie
was...
about the Ren Faire knights that ride motorcycles? Knight Riders.
Oh my God.
That's the George Romero film to remember.
Right.
George Romero is. I mean, if you have to pick one thing, one phrase for George Romero, it's of the dead.
Yeah, right.
I always go back to whenever you go on George Romero's IMDb page, and it's his upcoming project is always .. of the dead.
Sure. Well, also, George A. Romero might be have one of the highest ratios of amount of films he's done to amount of times he appeared in a thank you section.
Sure.
On somebody's movie.
Sure. Well, and let's not forget, he's even bridged the gap into video games. He did the, what was it, Call of the Dead? The Call of Duty Zombies thing?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was it with Sarah Michelle Gellar and Danny Trejo and Michael Rooker and that whole group.
And Robert Englund, man. Don't forget Robert Englund.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Robert Englund's got the pitchfork in that. So George Romero, I mean, he's in touch with his audience. He knows Of the Dead is his thing. Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, Land of the Dead, Survival of the Dead, and Diary of the Dead, I think.
Well done.
Are the six players so far. So George Romero invented zombies. Fuck everybody else. George Romero invented zombies. He didn't invent the word zombie. He didn't invent fast zombies. But he did do Dawn of the Dead. But he also, I mean, he's a horror guy. And Creepshow, if you want to talk about being in touch with your audience, Creepshow, I think.
Creepshow is more in touch with an audience than I even understand it being in touch with.
Yeah. I mean, Creepshow came out in, what, 1982?
Mm-hmm.
And it's your horror anthology ripped from the comics. I mean, it's everything that a fucking 18-year-old boy wants to be watching at 2 in the morning when his parents want him to be sleeping.
18-year-old boy? Is that? I might have gone for a younger demographic.
The
kid in the movie certainly is younger than 18.
Sure. And I'm what, 25? And I still want to be watching it at 2 a.m. when I should be sleeping. So
agreed. Yeah, you want to talk about late night movie? This is the spot to go.
This is Trick or Treat of the 80s.
So what do you think the aesthetic is for Creepshow? How do you remember back to this movie?
The comic thing.
Yeah.
I always gravitate toward the comic thing, which I think the film uses really quite wonderfully. But at the same time, I also go towards, I always try to pick out what the stories do and what they're saying.
Sure.
Which one is this story? Who's in that story? Which one's Ted Danson?
Right. And because when we think about the way that anthologies are sort of remembered back to, there's often a through line in there. Trick or Treat, obviously we had the little Sam.
Right.
Creepshow is very much several distinct stories.
Sure.
That the stories themselves really just, you know, they have no overlap. Well, other than the written by Stephen King.
Written by Stephen King.
Which doesn't quite go on a poster.
Well, and don't forget that Creepshow has its mascot, the Creeper. And if you haven't met the Creeper, I think it's time to meet the Creeper. So let's dig in deeper to Creepshow.
I was wondering how many lines you could get through on that. So I think Stephen King is also somebody, whether you want to or not, you have to give credit for knowing his audience.
Oh, you said give credit. I thought you were going to say watch act in one of these little episodes.
Where's Stephen King at?
Stephen King turns into a flower. His inner beauty comes out. He picks up a meteor. And despite his intentions of selling the meteor for, what, $500?
Again, not even enough money to do your podcast. But twice as much money as you would get for being a test subject,
right,
in The Killing Room.
So he breaks the meteor in half, and so he's the hilarious bumbling farmer in the "I'm Turning Into a Plant" episode. I don't remember what's it called. It growing up or something. They all have really stupid pun names.
Sure, right.
But it is one of the more amusing ones because Stephen King. So we talked about Stephen King directing way back when we did, what was that called? Maximum Overdrive for the massacre?
Hell yeah, Maximum Overdrive.
That's a Stephen King directorial effort there. And
right.
I don't think
we've seen a lot of Stephen King. We've revisited that probably about once a year.
Sure.
Kind of coming back around to Stephen King, intentionally or unintentionally. Huge name in horror, shows up all over the place.
Yeah. But we always get written by Stephen King.
Yeah.
What we never get is starring Stephen King. And so to see him front one of the episodes, it's amazing.
Oh my God, does that make this comic book tributes by and starring horror legends?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
God.
I think
that's funny. Starring their writers.
I think Stephen King having written all these things, that's fantastic in its own right. But to watch Stephen King act is really, I mean, he's corny. He belongs more in the Critters franchise than, say, the Alien franchise.
Yeah.
But
well, once again, the overall wearing, you know, yeah, farmhand from Critters.
But he's perfect. I mean, he knows what he's doing. And he's got the idea of his written character so strong that, I mean, I can't imagine George Romero had to do much in the way of telling him how to be, or if he had to do anything at all.
And then Tom Savini is a trash man, because why not?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Put some Tom Savini in here.
Sure.
If you're going to create the memorable 80s late night TV flipping, you know, Amazon Women on the Moon, was that the name of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A late night anthology kind of thing, and do it in the horror genre, why not Tom Savini?
Well, and also, why not Ed Harris? And why not Ted Danson? And why not Leslie Nielsen?
Oh my God, Leslie Nielsen's one is just my favorite. You know, that you start to tie in these elements of the Twilight Zone. You see that just a little tiny bit in each of these. It's as if at their heart they are Twilight Zone episodes, but they're trying so desperately to go, you know, give us skeletons and decaying bodies. And,
monkeys from beyond.
Half dead things, yeah. The Roach story is very, very much the same way. It's straight out of the Twilight Zone, but with a little bit more macabre, a little more gruesome bent to it.
I believe it's a little bit more Tom Savini. I think that's what you call that.
Yeah, sure.
If we're going to call favorites, my favorite has to be the Hal Holbrook, Adrian Barbeau demon monkey.
Of course it is. The crate.
Right. And yours is called The Water.
Tide You Over.
To Tide You Over. Fuck you.
No, I'm serious. I think that's the name of it.
No, I know. It is. And the cockroaches is They Creep Up on You.
Yeah, I don't know.
Isn't that what
Something
it is?
Like that.
But anyway, I like the crate, the one with the demon monkey and Hal Holbrook being the sad kind of locked in a marriage, too benevolent.
Really funny. Oh. Really funny.
So we saw Hal Holbrook when we did The Fog.
Yeah.
I don't know if you recall that. He was the priest in The Fog.
Sure.
And Adrian
too. Oh, right?
Yes.
Also from The Fog.
Adrian Barbeau, I know every time.
Playing the most get the fuck away from me character. Cannot stand her being around.
And
the ability of her to even... Man, that's the kind of thing, if I had the skill to act and I saw a character that reprehensible, I'm not sure I could bring myself to ever have my image associated with what a just offensively bad thing that is.
Well, and if you want to talk about reprehensible, I like to dive into the crate just for a second. I know that we're not going to really be able to talk about all the moral implications of every single tiny installment in Creepshow, but The Crate I thought was fantastic for me because it was the first one that I didn't see as a horror story.
Sure.
It's this crate with a monkey that eats the janitor and eats the smart kid and then eats his bitchy wife.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also helps Hal Holbrook's character find his inner strength, because by knowing that that crate is there and by having been the only one to stop its, you know, rampant devouring of the campus.
Sure.
Now, not only does he have the strength to stand up for himself and get rid of his wife, but now he also, and I'm not saying he's a good guy.
Right.
But now he also has that power over his friend.
Sure.
Who kind of was there for him, but now he's a more confident and upstanding member of society. And barring the last scene where the monkey escapes from the crate, everything in that story wraps up quite nicely.
Well, this happens so much for, you know, the moralistic and humanistic hosts of this show. The ends do not justify the means.
Right.
But in every movie, it's the fucking ends justify the means. Right. This happens so frequently that, you know, I think as a humanist, you just look at it and you can only consider the means.
Sure.
You can't take a story like that and go, well, everything the story's trying to tell us is wrong because... You know, they're devouring people in order to gain self-confidence.
Sure.
It always has to be about the end, never about the means, when you're considering what a movie's trying to say.
Right.
And it's not that way in real life.
No. It's also not that way in The Walking Dead game, which is where my morality lands very firmly.
There is no ends. There is only means, right?
Correct.
And that's, you just can't. So movies get it wrong that way all the time.
Right.
So when we want to hold a movie up and when we want to see really what it's saying in its heart, the cinema part is the means.
Mm-hmm.
The part it's telling us is the ends.
Right.
The cinema part is going, yeah, you know, slaughter and kill and extinguish human life. that's the means. We're supposed to forget about that part. The ends is self-confidence. This is a story about, you know, gaining self-confidence, and that's important.
Well, and also in the To Tide You Over segment, we get a really backwards, moral, reprehensible thing where we have basically a serial killer, right? Just a fucking fucked up evil man played by our favorite Airplane star and Naked Gun star, Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah.
And then he gets his just desserts, right?
Sure.
And we're supposed to feel okay now that that man has been wiped off the planet by the two people he horrendously murdered.
Sure.
And they're not alive. They're not okay.
Right.
Sam Malone didn't get out of the water and walk back up and free his girlfriend and then kill Leslie Nielsen out of self-defense.
Sure.
He died.
It's a backwards anti-scientific idea of karma.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but it balances out, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
See, he killed those people, but then the people killed him. So really, at the end of the day, everything's okay, don't
right.
you think? Because
zeroes out. It zeroes
balance
out.
Balance has been, yeah.
Right.
It doesn't fucking zero out. Come on. Anyway,
it's a net loss for our fair nation.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Two wrongs don't make a right. You want your nice little packaged cinema motif. Hey, speaking of packaging, let's go back to that comic book thing for a second. So yeah, I never really got back to that, but I think about it the same way. I think that comic book look, whether, you know, that really was how the movie was portrayed or not, as I think back to it, kind of like the Warriors, I think a lot about the comic pages mm-hmm. and it telling that story.
I always go back to Repo. Is that weird?
Yeah, well, Repo's got a lot of that comic book stuff too.
Yeah.
It's something Repo and the Warriors have in common. The kid, you know, his parents are really upset he's reading comic books.
Right.
Which, I mean,
like the Twisted Sister video.
Seems like an insane thing to me.
Yeah.
But we're introducing each of these stories using the comic book pages flipping in the trash. And I guess the comic book itself laying in the trash through the whole movie is probably also some kind of metaphor.
Uh-huh.
But
well, then into the gutter. Don't forget it blows from the trash into the gutter.
No, you're right. It's not an accidental metaphor. It's clearly where we're going. And Tom Savini being the trash man
sure.
also plays into that. This type of consideration perhaps only given by Stephen King. I like, though, that when we show the comic book pages, it also takes a moment to consider what is the less referenced part of comics and film, or even the idea of comic books, which is the letters to the editor, the ads.
Mm-hmm.
We think a little bit about that back page X-ray vision idea sometimes.
Sure.
But usually when we think about comic books, we're thinking about the meat of it. And there was a weird part of comics that have been kind of overlooked now into the digital age and as stories get collected into graphic novels,
mm-hmm.
which is these really, really era-specific ads for
sure.
you know, Sega Genesis video games.
And voodoo dolls. And sea monkeys.
Well, and those were kind of the 50s and 60s ones
right.
a lot, right?
Sure, yeah.
You get to see as you look through comics how the inserted pages have changed.
Yeah.
How now you buy a comic book and it's 10 pages long and 3 pages of story. I mean, that's a little hyperbole, but not much. I don't know if I've told you about the Marvel thing I did, right? I don't think I've ever talked about that on the show.
Yeah.
I'm actually part of this problem. There was a brief period where I worked for Marvel or for somebody who worked for Marvel or for a company of a company of a company that had Marvel as a client or something that helped digitize these comics. So I was one of the artists who would go through, and I hate to even use the word artist because I felt like I was painting by numbers. It was very mm-hmm. technical work. But we were taking the old masters of these comics. I worked on John Carter of Mars.
Okay.
And I'd go back through the original pencil drawings that had been digitized and color them using the approved Marvel swatches, which mm-hmm. was pretty cool. There's a standard sort of set of colors they use. And you'd look at the original page. You'd get a scan of one of these pages
mm-hmm.
of the comic that is decrepit now. What used to be pure white is now this kind of off tan. I mean, every page just looks like it had, you know, floated around underwater.
Like it had blown from the trash into the gutter.
Yeah, right.
Found its way into the garbage truck.
So everything was just a shade of brown, just this awful old shade of brown. And you were looking at the intentions of when it came out, what were the colors supposed to look like? So we were going through and restoring them so they could be purchased digitally. So I think, and I really had no follow-up on this, but I think if you go buy a digital comic of John Carter of Mars, I'm pretty sure that's my work. I should probably check up on that because that's...
Sure.
We've just never talked about it. It's kind of a cool thing, and I really don't know what happened to it.
John Carter of Mars was the greatest film flop in history, and they never released those comics is probably what happened.
Yeah, because we'll never cover John Carter of Mars on our show.
Right.
You're 15 of double feature when we talk about John Carter of Mars. Maybe
with the Lone Ranger remake.
Yeah, right. Maybe we'll check back up on that. So Creepshow had this very interesting relationship with the Tales from the Crypt franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we talked about Critters and Gremlins. We've talked a lot about the sometimes adversarial relationship of two movies that will come out at kind of the same time or different franchises that exist, one because of the other.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes in the case of, say, A Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th,
yeah,
they very much grow into their own things.
Right.
And even cross back over into each other.
Mm-hmm.
The ultimate of those stories in my mind is always Ants and A Bug's Life.
Sure.
As just one blatantly stole the idea from the other, and there was a power struggle trying to, you know,
mm-hmm.
a lot of political battles behind that. So Tales from the Crypt was an EC comic that inspired this movie back in the 50s. And a little bit had been done in cinema with Tales from the Crypt, but not very much, with different stories kind of from EC Comics. This came in 82, and it was just completely, you know, an homage to mm-hmm. that. It's not actually any licensed Tales from the Crypt stories, but it paved the way for that 89 series that would come out later on HBO.
Yeah.
The you know, good proper Tales right. of the Crypt series. That series would later turn into at least two films, Demon Knight and Bordello of Blood.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think there was some extra, I know there was a Tales from the Crypt animated series.
Right.
And the franchise had some life
mm-hmm.
after that, certainly. So those had this relationship with each other as kind of horror anthologies. But also, you mentioned Trick or Treat. I mean, anthologies have been huge
sure.
in horror.
I mean, anthologies have been huge in film, but I think horror is a good, it's the pulse right now of
sure.
cinemaphiles, which is weird because I don't think that a lot of people give horror fans the credit that they deserve.
Sure.
But I feel like there's a lot of sculpting going on in the horror community.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Everybody's on board with everything that comes out to a certain degree.
Sure.
Just because horror people like to see more horror.
Sure, sure.
And it never gets old and it's always fun, even if the film is bad.
Well, and you also get this excuse for a lot of these guys to work together.
Sure.
I got to go, you and I haven't talked about this at all. I got to go to the VHS 2 premiere.
Oh, yeah.
Which came out on, it went to, you know, online video first
mm-hmm.
and then came out really limited in theaters. So I went to the premiere in San Francisco with Hannah Hughes, who starred in the film, but
yeah.
more importantly is an executive producer on our show. That's not true. Not more importantly. But Hannah was fucking great in it. She was in the first one. And VHS 2 is just, we got to put it on the show somehow because
yeah.
it's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
The thing was just a blast. But every time we see these horror anthologies, you know, and you get the guys from, Hobo with the Shotgun, but
sure.
also the Blair Witch Project.
Right.
People coming together and making stuff together, names you thought would never cross over.
Right. Well, and we got ABCs of Death now.
Right.
I mean, everything is coming out and it's all because horror fans and Twitter have combined.
Right. So you think Twitter is to blame for...
I don't think Twitter's to blame. I think that The Onion and our short attention spans.
Right.
I think the fact that... When was the last time you read a whole article?
I don't know.
That's why headlines are two lines long now, is because once you go, Jay-Z's new album is released and it sucks.
Yeah.
then you go, I don't need to read the article. If somebody brings it up at the party tonight, I'll say I heard it sucked.
But see, this is what I love about anthologies. And I was thinking about this a lot when I saw the VHS sequel, because it is so good and I enjoy it so much. And I think it's very easy to look at this cynically and go, all people care about is headlines.
Sure.
Or that we might go, oh, see, our attention spans have gotten so short. This is all we have to offer anymore. But I think of it the opposite way. I think of it that our culture is in a place where we can aggregate more news and more information.
Sure.
Perhaps the internet has made our attention span shorter, But that doesn't mean we can't still have jam-packed quality cinema.
No, that's what I mean.
Like these anthologies.
Sure, is that you get more faster, and that's what people want. I'm not trying to tear it down.
You think
and
this
say,
is a successful adaptation to the time?
Yeah, I'm not saying if you can't make a horror movie last 90 minutes, you're not making a horror movie.
Well,
I'm saying I want to read 26 headlines, and I want them to be awesome.
I know. Well, and that's great, too, is we've also, you know, as we look through the history of horror, we find a lot of movies that were only 20 minutes, but were drug into an hour and a half.
Sure.
And these anthologies are beautiful because I've never seen, from the worst anthology horror film to the best, I've never seen one and gone, man, you're really stretching this story much further than you had story for. So Creepshow did live on as its own franchise. It had a sequel by the director of cinematography from this movie. And more Stephen King stories that were written into a screenplay by George Romero.
Mm-hmm.
There was a third Creepshow in 2006.
All right, so we're almost there.
Yeah, no involvement, not based on the comic. But in 2009, and people should really go check this out, there was a thing called Creepshow Raw. Did you ever see this?
No.
Yeah, it's not. It's kind of hard to find. I mean, not if you have the internet. I guess you just Google it now that you know it exists. But it's certainly not as popular as the films. But it was a pilot. It's very short, too. It's a pilot by the guy who did Fear, F-E-A-R,
mm-hmm.
and the game Condemned.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Michael Madsen's in it. It was going to be a web series, and I don't think anything happened to it. But it's also got comic book art, fittingly for our show, by Alex Pardee, who is resident... favorite comic book artist who did the stuff for Sucker Punch. We talked a lot about Alex Pardee. And now I want to talk a lot about the specials.
Yeah, well, we have a really nice segue here because, let's see, let me just do it really quick. Ready?
Yeah, please.
George Romero created Dawn of the Dead, which was remade in 2003, directed by Zack Snyder, but written by our good friend James Gunn, who also, interestingly enough, wrote the specials. Here is the specials.
Thank you. Well done. I also like when we say things like our good friend James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
If you meet James Gunn, ask him about Eric and Michael from Double Feature.
Yeah.
Because he has a lot to... He's never fucking met us. He has no idea who we are.
No, it's sad.
No, but we love James Gunn.
I love James Gunn so much, Eric.
So you love James Gunn in the way that if I said this was the rare James Gunn acting role, you would say, that's crazy. He's acted in tons of things.
Yes, exactly.
But I think James Gunn, you know, has gotten, thankfully... rightfully so, a lot more popular in recent years.
Sure. I mean, he's fucking steamrolling.
Yeah. Beyond the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff, mm-hmm. you and I talked about him with Super.
Sure.
We talked about him with the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Yeah. Don't forget Slither.
Yes, absolutely did his film Slither.
We did Lolly Love.
We didn't do Lolly Love. We should do Lolly Love. So that Lolly Love gets back into the... God, we spent a lot of time talking about that on the early years of the show. That gets back into that era of James Gunn showing up in things he wrote.
Well, James Gunn began in Troma.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he was born. That's why we have the cameos we have in Super.
Right.
With Lloyd Kaufman showing up. But James Gunn began as a writer for Troma. And that is to go from a writer for Troma to... directing one of the biggest releases in the second leg of the Marvel Universe thing. I mean,
yeah.
The biggest stepping stone is going from not Troma to regular film, and that's what the specials was.
Yeah.
The specials is James Gunn writing and apparently starring in a non-Troma feature.
And starring alongside some other people that would go on to also have huge careers if they weren't by this time already.
Yeah.
And then, you know, show up in comic book movies. I mean, you have... Thomas Hayden Church, the Sandman,
which
perhaps is not
sure
Thomas Hayden Church's most iconic role, but was in the year that that movie came out, it sure fucking was.
Right.
Judy Greer, who's not in a comic book, but is in Arrested Development.
I love Judy Greer.
Someone's going to email us and let us know that Judy Greer has her own comic book that I didn't know about. But man, Arrested Development is becoming more and more like an anthology
sure.
over time. It's almost reaching Creepshow proportions. Rob Lowe, huge in this movie. Big TV star for a lot of these people do a lot of great TV work.
Sure.
But recently with Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
And you know, myself being the adamant Aaron Sorkin fan, West Wing as well.
Right.
Rob Lowe is one of my favorite parts of that series.
Well, and we also have Jordan Ladd, who plays Nightbird in this film. And we saw her, Cabin Fever. She's been heavy hitting in horror for us for a long time, but she kind of showed up with dark hair in the specials. It took me forever to figure out who the hell she was.
Sure, yeah.
And then we have the Gunn brothers, James and Sean. Sean plays the alien orphan. I have this theory that James Gunn intentionally writes these embarrassing roles for his brother just to watch him play alien orphan or guy who gets his legs cut off in Super.
Doug is, I'm going to call him Doug, is terrifying. I'm going to be nice and call him Doug because I think it's funny and they really never come back to it. There's that moment where he orders the drink.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, it triggers my skepticism radar very frequently.
Uh-huh.
Two things I've been dying to ask you since the second the specials was over.
Uh-huh.
About the authenticity both of Doug and of the world's smartest man.
Yeah.
I want to know, Doug orders a drink and he seems to know English pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Is that an indication that he is a heavy drinker or that perhaps he's putting on a show?
You know, I don't really know exactly what's going on with that. I mean, we see the end, right? And if we're to believe the end, he can actually turn into some sort of evil pterodactyl dragon.
Right. So he can transform, which means he could also, I know I'm playing into, this is a way geekier conversation about the specials.
No, that's what this whole film is though.
Okay. So if he can turn into a crazy bird monster creature, he could in theory, let's just speculate on his powers. Maybe he has the power to morph and he could have turned into a green ball of ooze to make people think he could be perpetuating a hoax here.
Sure. It's totally possible. He dances better than most alien orphans would.
For his lack of social understanding of social norms, he certainly busts a move. Hey, the world's smartest man. What the fuck is going on there?
I think the world's smartest man is actually Wayne Szalinski from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, sure. The world's smartest man has some good inventions, or it at least looks like he's put together some... He's cobbled together some kind of technology for both jetpacks and sniffing devices, but his intelligence is called into question frequently in the film. And also, he makes some comments about very simple mathematic equations and other things in a way that makes him, I don't know if it's a joke about the writing of the movie, and well, this is smart guy talk, you know, like, here's what two numbers put together equal.
Right.
Or if in fact he just happens to be the smartest guy in a room of 10 people.
Sure. Well, I think the thing that the specials does so perfectly is it brings a bunch of people together, tells you they all have powers, then slowly tells you what all their powers are.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're just supposed to go, so that's what they can do.
Yeah, right.
And then for the rest of the film, you're asking, well, wait, what is this? What is that? What do you mean? What exactly does it mean to be able to shoot antimatter?
Right.
Does it go through anything, or do you have to create specific antimatter for just like a woman's ass to make that disappear?
Right, right.
And when you say lasers, is it like a hot laser or is it like a laser pointer?
Sure.
And by indestructible, does that make her stronger than normal, or can she just say run into fire as long as she covers her eyes?
So you're asking a lot of the questions of, say, a 2010 comic book going audience.
I mean, when you see the basic idea, so let's take, I think the best thing to put the specials up against is X-Men, because you could do Spider-Man, you can do Iron Man, you can do Captain America, but that's only ever one person. X-Men touts thousands of mutants, all with their own individual powers.
Which became a problem for the comic series. I think at some point it was literally every third person on Earth had mutant abilities.
And so the thing that's great about the specials is in X-Men, they go, we have this person, this person, this person, and this person. Now we have to find their 10 minutes in the film where their power becomes the focus of the film.
Sure.
So that you can see them in action. The specials isn't really about them in action. It's about them out of action and how the implications of being a superhero team affects people socially.
Well, yeah, we're getting confessionals from them. It's like watching the real world.
Right. It's the downtime from superheroes that even Iron Man doesn't quite pull off. Because in Tony Stark's downtime in Iron Man, he's building Iron Man uniforms and doing right. Iron Man stuff.
You can't, hold on, you can't call Tony Stark's technological feat a uniform. He's building a fucking suit of iron. He's building a robotic ultra weapon. It's not, you know, a felt mask
sure.
that you strap on so no one knows your identity.
Yeah. For U.S.
Oh my
U.S.
God.
Bill. Nobody knows his identity, nor do they know his secret home lair, nor do they really understand why the Shadow Ear is so funny for so long.
Well, I love finally seeing him communicate with a person who yeah. is like himself. Understanding, you know, what that, just thinking even about what that scenario would look like is funny. Also, nothing is funnier. I'll get to the action figures. But nothing is funnier than you take off his mask. That's the ability. It just happens to be the ability they put into his character. Let's talk about the action figures right now, actually, yeah. if you don't mind.
Okay.
Because I think it's such a colossal disaster. It's really one of the spots that the specials nails.
Mm-hmm.
Creating this, all right, a line of toys are going to come out, going to finally put these guys on the map. Not only are, you know, the toys coming out a failure, but they're a failure in more, they do more harm than good.
Yeah.
They're a bigger failure than, you know, than the representation of the specials when there were no toys, than if the toys had not come out at all.
Right.
Instead, they completely, the big problem with the specials is they view, they have a lower spot on the societal ladder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the misfits, the rebels, I believe the crazy ones is what the, sure. where the specials are. And they think that's just because of a lack of perception.
Uh-huh.
They think they really have the power of these other groups. They're just perceived mm-hmm. Incorrectly. And so these toys come out, and the toys are just colossal misconceptions
sure.
of every fucking character packaged in a way that's not going to help them at all.
Well, two of them are villains.
Yeah, I know. Well, and then on Bill's point, you know, the only feature built in is the one thing that he happens to be concerned about.
Yeah.
So funny.
I love that Minuteman.
Yeah, right.
I love that Minuteman is black.
Yeah.
I'm going to continue calling him Minuteman until I see the official press release that his name has been changed to Small.
Oh my God. If James Gunn is listening and writes us an angry letter saying it's pronounced Minuteman, I will do something. I don't know. I would die.
Fucking print it out and get it tattooed on my back.
Yeah, it would become a one sheet poster art for a show forever. Where was I going with this? I was going somewhere. Oh, and so this is where you see James Gunn just at his best in his writing.
Uh-huh.
Just going, man, twist the knife. Make the dark darker. Make the bleak bleaker. Just make everything heavier and more terrible than you were, perhaps most importantly, you were prepared for.
Right.
That was super. We didn't think we were sitting down for that.
Yeah.
And God damn it, is that what was given to us? And that's... our reaction during Super is all of the specials during their action figure
sure.
Unveiling.
Sure. Yeah.
They're going, wow, I hadn't even considered that this was in the realm of possibilities. And
right.
now what do we do? What is the reaction, you know, in that time? The other thing I think is really great is the comedic timing.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
another place that the specials absolutely shines to me. It's something I wonder about because I'm not sure where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there is this perfect amount of just several second delay, just perfect comedic pause, comedic timing in everyone's delivery. And it's, for the most part, the same style, no matter who's giving that joke.
Mm-hmm.
But the nature of timing is a strange thing. I don't know if that's the way James Gunn is writing it, because you don't, it's not like you put in a stage direction for how many seconds to,
right.
to let the joke hang in the air. But it seems pretty uniform amongst the actors. Who do you think, if I want to give credit to somebody for the timing, where does that go?
I honestly don't know.
Is that an editor? That's kind
I
of an editing
say,
thing, right?
It really can be any of the people in the chain. It could be acting, directing, writing, editing. It could just be your and my willingness to laugh at everything James Gunn has ever done.
Sure. That could be it too, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think
how's
that,
the comedic timing in Lollipop Chainsaw, by the way? Is
oh,
that still a James Gunn staple, or are we in a different spot on that?
It's so good. Everything about Lollipop Chainsaw is amazing.
I figured you'd dig that.
It's just fucking hilarious. But I think that one of the funniest and most poignant things in the specials for me is the Weevil.
Mm-hmm.
And let me explain why. As we get Power Chick,
sure,
and Nightbird with her tricky eggs. And,
tricky eggs is the best name for a superpower ever. Tricky eggs.
And Amok. And everybody's got these superpowers, but they've all been very, very well explained. You know, this woman's indestructible. I can shoot lasers out of my arms. This is the application of U.S. Bill's strength. And this is how 8 applies in a setting of, you know, superhero-dom.
And I think Amok's power is to steal the scenes that he's in. Isn't
right.
that?
Yeah.
To be completely fucking awesome to watch all the time.
And that's Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah, I know.
Like, can you believe that?
Yeah, that's great.
But the thing that I love about the Weevil is that the Weevil is the one everybody loves, and he's the one that's getting promoted and the one that's getting all this acclaim. And then when they go, you know, because he's got Weevil-like strength and Weevil-like agility, and it's the most vague. His powers don't. And then finally you get the scene where it goes, and we need somebody with a power like yours. And we're just like, yes, okay, finally. They're going to explain what the Weevil can do. And the guy basically says, charisma.
Right. Well, and also blue suit. We don't
blue
have
suit,
anybody with
blue,
a
blue suit and charisma. I mean, the Weevil is supposedly the best hero on the specials, but the film goes through painstaking efforts to go, well, what the fuck can you do? This guy can pick up a car.
Right.
What are you doing? You got goofy antenna.
Well, and best of all is you'd never see what the Weevil does, even in the brief payoff moment at the end of the movie.
Right.
The Weevil is not shown with any sort of, you know, exhibiting any special ability because of where the movie goes in the end.
Right.
So that's possibly the most obvious thing the specials does, is not showing the special powers.
Right.
That really makes it stand out from every other comic book
movie exactly.
ever made, is it's a superhero drama where we don't even attempt. I mean, what a genius idea for the film's budget.
Mm-hmm.
To go special powers, fuck it. We're not even going to get invested in that. Let's write a movie where it's all human drama and we don't even see the powers. But don't you think that's also, I mean, it's at the very least a gamble.
Yeah.
I think you and I both agree it pays off totally because it's what makes the movie what it is.
Right.
But God, that's got to be a frightening moment to go, can we do this?
Right.
Can we make a superhero movie where people go to see it because it's superheroes, but we're not going to show them do fucking anything?
Right. And I think that would disappoint your average superhero going audience. I mean, if you look at the scale of the superhero movies that are coming out now, you look at Man of Steel and the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Man of Steel in particular, the scope of the powers in Man of Steel, I mean, you have people throwing people through buildings, you have people punching people for miles.
Right.
The powers are the focus of the film. Sure, it's starring Superman, but in reality, we just are watching people fly fuck shit up.
Right.
And that, you know, that's a huge critically successful box office blockbuster.
Mm-hmm.
The specials, you have a guy that can shoot lasers out of his arms. The best you ever see is some puffs of smoke.
Well, they even diminish it more by saying he's going to go use it to weld steel.
Yeah.
You know, they take powers you can't even see and make, you know, cut them down.
It's just, you never get the kind of delivery that you would get in your normal blockbuster superhero flick. And I think that people would be really let down going into it with the wrong point of view. Whereas I just think that that's the one thing that a superhero movie's never done.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the film important.
That's the thing that becomes difficult for every other movie to do.
Right.
To go, let's really have human drama. Let's ground this into reality. When comic book movies, for the most part, went away for a decade, they went away because they were all camp and powers. And audiences, you know, it grew stale quickly. And when they came back around, that was, let's ground it in reality. That was the big thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring human emotion and drama to it. And that becomes, you know, if you're tasked to build the latest superhero blockbuster, honestly, the trickiest part for you is going to be getting people invested in these human beings. Whereas the specials created the opposite conundrum for itself.
Mm-hmm.
It said, God, the hardest thing for us to do is going to be, can we show these powers at all anywhere for even the briefest period of time? It changed the entire game. It goes, the human drama part, we got that. That's, you know, people walk around and talk in our movie. That's what happens in all our movies.
Mm-hmm.
It treated with great ease the thing that all these other superhero movies struggle with. So the website for this thing you're listening to is doublefeatureshow.com. The email address to get a hold of us if you're James Gunn is doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. And the executive producers of this fine program are Flynn Ironstag, Maxwell Harley, Meta Somerville, and from VHS 2, star Hannah Hughes. Seriously, go see that. It's fucking incredible. What are we watching next time on this show?
All right, next time we have to be very specific. Next time on the show, we are doing Invincible and Mr. Frost.
Ah, yes.
However, I want to make it very clear,
sure,
that the film called Invincible that we are covering is starring Tim Roth, and I believe it's directed by, what is it,
Werner Herzog.
Yeah, it's Werner Herzog.
Yeah, finally a Werner Herzog movie on this show. That's going to be great for us to chart ourselves right into. But also some Jeff Goldblum, which you know, will just bring me right back into the realm of comfortability.
Yeah. So let's shy away from watching that movie where Kurt Russell plays hockey.
Oh God.
And watch more fucking film.
Bye.